This is Nursing in America. Each week, we speak with incredible Filipino nurses who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream.
Everybody watching, welcome to the 8th Lafora Talk Show. We are so excited today. We are going to be speaking to two new guests, Joe and Alvin. Joe and Alvin, if you have any other, your cell phone or anything, like, if you want to turn it off, I think there seems to be a little bit of interference in the line. We want to welcome everybody today, and we can't wait to hear the stories of Joe and Alvin. Both are two nurses who are already in the U.S. Alvin has been here for many years. Joe, not as many years, but that is going to be really interesting to hear two different perspectives. My name is Tanya Friedman. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Kinetics USA. And we are really excited to get started. Before we do, just a quick shout out to the Lafora admin team. Unfortunately, Paul, Jean, Yanni are really busy today, so won't be able to join us. So it will just be the three of us chatting. We'll miss them. And we thank them for this opportunity, because the purpose of the Lafora Talk Show is really just to help. There are many of you all over the world who are dreaming of coming to America. Some of you might have already found a sponsor and a petitioner and might be in the process. Some of you might have just passed the NCLEX exam, or some might be preparing for the NCLEX exam. So wherever you are in the journey, this Lafora Talk Show is for you, because coming to America can be one of the most exciting but also challenging experiences of your life. And Alvin and Joe are so gracious, will have come here to share their story with you, so that you can learn from their experiences and prepare yourself, because knowledge is power. Okay, so Alvin and Joe, if you want to maybe tell us a little bit about yourself. Before you came to America, just a little bit of your background. Who would like to get started? Don't all jump at once. And again, everybody, this is really just an informal chat. This is not formal. We intend to have fun here, just conversation, as if we are sitting around the fire chatting about experience. That's really the purpose. And just one thing before I forget also, please do not private message the guests, because we don't want to overwhelm them. If you have specific questions, please put them into the chat and I'd be happy to ask that. And we're really excited because we have a new segment, which is called Lafora Stateside, which is where the guests are going to be talking about the state where they are working in. Mm-hmm. You're tuning in now, you know, continue listening for the full talk show, because towards the end, they're going to tell us about the states. Okay, maybe we'll start with Alvin, because he's been here the longest. We heard last night in the teaser, and Alvin's been here 20 years, like me. So Alvin, do you want to tell us a little bit about your history and your background before we talk about coming to America?
Sure, absolutely. So I started nursing school back in 1992. So I finished in 96. And at that time, the dean, who was a nun, asked me, why do you want to study nursing? And my answer then was like, well, I want to serve humanity. So looking back,
wow,
for a 16-year-old, that was a little pompous. But you know what? That's exactly what I did. I served humanity. I served as a bedside nurse before I became a leader. I was a bedside nurse for many years. I worked in telemetry. I worked in critical care, and I enjoyed, you know, being a nurse and, you know, having that impact to patients, to their families, to my community, where I also volunteered in many different causes, especially, you know, serving the underserved population where, you know, they don't have medical care. So I volunteered my services as a nurse, where, you know, I found that very, very helpful in really looking back to my journey, where, you know, I wanted to serve. And that's what I did. And so when I graduated, the H-1A visa program just basically ended. So there were no opportunities. So the alumni of my alma mater, they were saying, you know, there's no hiring, there's no visa, so there's no need for you all to take the CGFNS and any other, you know, exams because there's no hiring. So I did, you know, decide to still, you know, pursue other opportunities working. And at the same time, I thought, it's closed right now, but eventually it will open. And so I still pursued, you know, studying for the CGFNS before I became, you know, before I started working with a nurse. And that really helped me a lot because that preparation just, you know, made me more like prepared for what's to come. Like when I know that when I start working, I will not have a lot of time to devote studying and reviewing for a test. But I was focusing more on, you know, what can I do now? What can I do next? And then what can I do in the future? So my journey to America started really when I, you know, passed the CGFNS back in 97. And then I started looking for opportunities. It was actually, I read in the Philippine Star, actually, it was attorney Garfinkel. He was instrumental in that decision making because he gave me ideas and, you know, there's still opportunities out there, but things may evolve eventually. So that's what I did. I just kept on reading the news and keeping myself open and ready for anything that's about to come. And so in 99, there were talks about, you know, the U.S. is open again. So that, you know, that became like a thing for me. And that paved the way for me to really apply. And actually, the process really started back in 97, 98, where, you know, there were lawyers who talked about opportunities for nurses who had H-1A visas to transition into being sponsored by their employers. So that kind of led to nurses being eligible for immigrant visa. And that was the EB3 job category, which I think most agencies and employers prefer now. So that's really how I came about. So right now, I'm a nurse leader. I'm a director of a cardiac ICU in a large hospital here in the DC, Metro DC area. And I look forward to answering your questions and sharing my experience too. Yeah.
Okay. That's a really interesting story. And I think so many people will be able to resonate, Alvin, with what you're saying. For me, the main takeaway really is to keep yourself moving forward in the next steps. So even if there are delays, because we all know this is a long process, you've got to have patience. But it, you know, it really is keeping yourself moving forward. So you took that CGFNS exam. For those of us, like me as well, who've been in this for a long time, remember when we had to take the CGFNS and then the NCLEX. So, you know, at least today, nurses can just take the NCLEX exam. Joe, what was your experience like? You've been here for much shorter time.
For me, it's not as great as what Alvin reason for being a nurse. For me, I became a nurse because it's one. So mostly that's the reason for all of us wants to go to the U.S. And honestly, I didn't know what I was going into. I just go with the flow. So since my parents, my uncle, my aunties, all they want me to be a nurse, so I just go along with it. But as a volunteer after my graduation, I fell in love with
Joe. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but your connection doesn't seem to be
Joe. I think I decided I really wanted to be a nurse in the long run. Unfortunately, it's so hard.
Joe, we seem to have some connection issue. I don't know why you're Alvin, can you also hear that? It seems to be kind of going in and out.
Yeah, he's breaking up a little bit.
Is it better now or still the same?
That's a little better. I think when you're moving around, maybe. So maybe, I know you're getting excited, but maybe try to sit. Because I think moving, it seems to break up a little bit. Sorry to interrupt you. Continue.
Please continue. So it was hard for me to find a work, especially when I went to Manila. It took me more than a year for me to find a work as a regular staff nurse. It was the time for the volunteerism, so everyone was taking advantage of us, particularly for big hospitals. I ended up taking the NCLEX. After taking the NCLEX, that's the time they gave me a proper work. I worked in a hospital for 5 years. It was tied up with a particular agency. While I was working, it's like building up my experience for the US. Unfortunately, retrogression did not really open. So I ended up like doing something else. So it was hard for me for those 5 years because I felt like my sacrifices for working for 5 years was useless, honestly. So I went to a BPO company. I worked there for more than 1 year, I guess, 1 year. Then after which I decided I just wanted to get out of the Philippines. So I took a job in Singapore as a nurse. There I worked for 5 years. And while working there, it was really tiring. Singapore is a really stressful place to work, especially for the schedule. We have to work like 6 days a week. The weight of the work is quite hard, harder than back in the Philippines, mostly for the bedside part. So it was taking a toll on me, both stress and body. Within 2016, I think one of my colleagues asked me, one of my previous colleagues in my previous hospital to join his agency. He said, yeah, okay, I'll give it a shot. So from then on, it took me like 2 years plus, 2 years and 6 months before I passed the visa interview in Singapore. So I think God has a plan for me. So after that, 3 months after, or so 2 months after, I arrived here in the US on July 16, 2019.
Wow. Very interesting. So the time that you've been in the US is obviously much shorter than the time that Alvin's been here. And you've also had that experience of working in another country. How is working in the US different to working in Singapore?
Okay. Like I said earlier, Singapore is really stressful for me. I think it's because the place where I work or particular ward that I work. Like in my previous floor, I usually take care of patients who are bedbound, who has a tricky patients. And the stress for taking care of those kind of patients like really burns you up. Like most of the time you'll be on your feet and doing bedside care. Then after which you have to stay a few hours just to complete everything like documentations. It's mostly like in the Philippines, but the bedside care is much heavier. Here in the US, it's so much easier. Working here for 1 year, I think my back was able to rest for 1 year. I didn't sleep as much as a patient. Also, the culture is quite different. Here, people or their seniors are really, really take care of you. They won't put you down like back in the Philippines or in Singapore. Like, they will try to grill you in any way that you can just to build you up. Here it's like they lift you up. It's like, okay, I'll teach you this, I'll do this for you next time, something like that. So it's really a different culture, honestly. So it's really a blessing for me to start my career here in the US, particularly in my place where it's really easy to start. And I think I was blessed with some of my seniors and colleagues.
And I can see that Alvin is nodding his head as you're talking. Yes, it seems you're agreeing 100%, Alvin. What is your experience similar to what Joe is? How was it different working in the Philippines compared to working in the US?
Okay, so my experience was similar to Joe, actually. The work environment here is just very different, very supportive. And as long as you're open and willing to learn, I think, you know, people are inclined to teaching you and giving you the support and resources that you need so you're successful. And a lot of hospitals here
are accredited by Joint Commission. And so we do have standards of care that are really the highest standards that I've seen, you know, in my whole career. And that kind of sets the tone for nurses to be successful, to be autonomous, and to practice at a high level. The main thing that I have seen when I first arrived here is, you know, technology. It is a big thing. And many advanced therapies, devices, and equipment that really spells the difference between patient management in the Philippines and here. Let's say, you know, a patient came in with chest pain and has a strong cardiac history. In the Philippines, you know, depending on how much, you know, the patient can pay, that will shape, you know, the direction of treatment and care. Here, it's very different. You expect your patient to have a full workup, lots of labs, lots of tests, lots of procedures. So as a nurse, you just have to be ready and anticipate that, you know, your patient will be going through all those procedures. And also treatment is driven by evidence-based practice and guidelines that are, you know, stemming from the American Heart Association, the American Cardiology Association. And the patient will likely get an angiogram. And if, you know, the heart needs more support, you expect your patient to end up with a balloon pump or an Impella. And just the trajectory of care is just so different, so fast, and so proactive because, you know, we really want to save lives here. So that's really the goal of treatment and care here. We make sure that, you know, every patient lives and that their outcomes are good. As far as nursing, there's a lot of autonomy in the United States. You know, in the Philippines, it's a very patriarchal society, where, you know, your doctor will tell you, these are my orders and you're going to follow them. Here it's different. Nurses are autonomous, but at the same time, that comes with a lot of accountability in your practice.
And when you come here, people will say, oh, you have a DSN and you have a nursing license, you pass the NCLEX. So they hold you to the highest level of your practice. Because, you know, the Board of Nursing, they have specific like stipulations and expectations as to patient care, expectations as to how you practice. So meaning, as a nurse, you are really accountable for your practice and for the care that your patient receives. And you are the trusted source of information and truth. So doctors will look up to you. Patients and families will look up to you and look for that information that they need when they come to the hospital. Also, it's important, you know, to really know your patient from your assessment findings, to your labs, to your medications, and to how your patient responded to the treatment. And the most important thing is communication, how you communicate your findings to your physicians, to your advanced practice providers, and when to escalate appropriately. And really, that's how I learned and sharpened my communication, because back in the Philippines, you just basically follow what the doctors tell you. But here, you have that voice where, you know, when you notice something, you speak and you do what is right by saying something to your provider that, you know, I'm concerned that my patient is, you know, having pain. Can we do something about this? And, you know, being truthful and doing things to advocate for your patient. For example, you notice a blood pressure change or a change in mental status. It's very different here because when you notice that, that's your duty to address that situation so that you will know, like, why is that happening? Maybe it's a blood sugar issue. Maybe your patient is hypoxic. Maybe your patient is having a stroke. Did you assess your patient and what did you do with that information to make sure that your patient, you know, have the best outcome? So that's really the key differences in practice.
Yeah. Being an advocate, I think, is a key word for your patient. Mm-hmm. And that is a big change for many nurses coming to the US, even if they've been nurses outside of the US for many, many years.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. If you know a friend or colleague who would benefit from listening to this conversation, please let them know about the show. We want to help as many nurses as we can turn their dreams into a reality. If you're thinking about making the step to living and working as a nurse in the USA, we can help you. Head over to kineticsusa.com to find out more. That's kineticsusa.com.
When you come to the US, culture shock is, I mean, it's a well-documented fact. How were you affected by culture shock? Joe, what was it like for you when you came to America in the very beginning? What were the things that were shocking, that really was a culture shock? Because the first few months, it's very well documented, can be a roller coaster.
Okay. For me, the first thing that really culture shocked me is how nice the people here are. Like, they're really welcoming and so nice. And they're unlike my patients back in Singapore or in the Philippines, wherein they look at you like lower or something, like below the food chain. Here, they really respect you. They really look at you like really highly. And one more thing is, one thing I had a problem is with the accent. I didn't know that different states, particularly in the US, have different accents, especially the older guys. They have a thick accent, especially here in Kentucky. They have a different accent. It's really hard to understand, especially if they're using their form of slangs. So it was one of the struggles for me. Another culture shock for me was if I was in the Philippines, I'll be shocked with some of the things like how a nurse should act. Like what Alvin said, you have more power, like you have more say. If I wanted, if there's something wrong with my patient, normally in the Philippines, you have to call the doctor. Here, you're the one doing most of the things first. Like you can do like a few blood tests, you can order those things, you can ask them to do give you some of the basic medications just to help. You don't really have to be dependent on your particular doctor. So and gadget wise, working in Singapore, honestly, as comparing to my workplace here, gadget wise, I think from my previous work, I had more like upgraded things. I think most of my colleagues who work in Singapore or in Abu Dhabi, they say the same thing. So it's not like what most of us expect, like what you watch in TV, like Grey's Anatomy or a doctor, a house or something. So for advice, don't have your expectation too high, because sometimes it's not really what it seems.
What do you mean it's not really what it is? You mean in terms of the technology? What specifically, Joe?
Because for me, when I looking at US on based on TV shows, I expect everything, like every all the gadgets will be available in any particular hospital here. Every supply will be available. I won't have any problem on this, like the things I'm having problem back in the Philippines. Fortunately, some of them are still like haunting you, even if you're in the US. But we have more gadgets here as compared back in the Philippines. But if I'm comparing it to Singapore or like other places, I think it's particularly for these particular places. So it really depends.
Okay.
I can relate to that, to what Joe said about, your expectations. I think what we see on TV and social media, what we read in books, it's really the ideal, framework of how things look like. But really, that's a very limited view of what truly happens in the day-to-day life. Because everywhere you go, there's going to be some challenges. It's not going to be perfect. So I think my best advice is to, manage down your expectations and be open to learning things, seeing things from another point of view, where you come to a place and you're really going to be shocked of what you will find. When I first came here, there was a lot of stereotyping. I worked in Florida where there were not a lot of Filipino nurses there. There were a few, but there's a lot of stereotyping. So because I was new, nobody really knew who I was and what I can do. So it's really up to you and how you want people to perceive you. And generally people just want to get to know you. But until then, you kind of have to prove yourself, because there's this impression of international nurses being shy, being subservient and not so good communicators, because again, our first language is not English. We have accents when you first come here. And so that can be a barrier. So how I address that, I had to take steps you know, introducing myself first. You know, when I first in a patient's room or when I first see a provider, I introduce myself. My name is Alvin. I'm your nurse today. How was your night? You know, how? What is the plan of care for today? What are we doing for our patient today? So that kind of opens up a conversation instead of you just waiting to be told what to do. You basically initiate the conversation and start that, so that people will say, "Oh, he's different. He's something that, you know, maybe he can help me." You know, so that kind of creates like a positive impression of you instead of that typical stereotype of an international nurse just coming to America. And like I said earlier, also, people here communicate directly. So that's so crucial, because in the Philippines, we're used to being shy. We're used to being told, you know, what to do next and how to do it. But here, let's say you have an issue with someone. It's so important to talk to them directly and address that particular issue or situation you're encountering. For, you know, in the Philippines, you would just, you know, keep quiet and not say anything. Here, that's not going to work, because having open communication is so important, because you need to know why the person was upset with you. And you have to be able to learn to listen and not interrupt when, you know, when they're talking, when they're saying something to you, so that, you know, you can acknowledge those concerns and say, you know, how can we make it better? And how can we do this moving forward, so that it creates an atmosphere more like positive, more empowering, and more helpful to both of you, so that you can take care of patients better. Yeah.
Yeah, I think really what you're both saying is that the expectations might be very different to the reality, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, it's going to come up to you to actually make that effort.
Correct, yes. Absolutely. Yeah, I think best effort, you do your best no matter what the circumstances are. Sometimes you will be faced with difficult, you know, challenges with patients and their families and with providers. And it's really up to you and how you will shape that, because your impression of them and their impression of you creates all that stereotype and all those communication and other barriers that you may experience.
Yeah.
So you drive that, you know. Yeah.
Driving it. That's a good way of putting it. You're the one who's in the driver's seat. Yeah. If, as I said, we have a lot of people that are watching today. If anybody has specific questions for Alvin, Joe, please put them into the chat and I would be happy to ask the questions. Alvin and Joe, in terms of the culture shock, can you talk a little bit about what you wish you knew before you came here? You know, maybe it's the kind of the communication side, but maybe it's like practical stuff, like how much money to bring, or, you know, how the school system works, or, you know, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about that piece of it?
Oh, me? Okay. For me, culture shock wise, I think work wise, some of the patients, I'm not used to having these kind of patients here, particularly those who have problems with medication, like pill seeking or addiction to pills. It's not a thing back in the Philippines or in Singapore, elsewhere. Here it's like, it's really a rampant. So it's really a culture shock for me. And sometimes I'm too naive to know that there's such a thing. And I kind of learned how to deal with these kind of patients after a few months dealing with them. And I think other problems here also wish I knew, I think expenses-wise, because when I started, I took my salary for this particular rate. I thought it was good, like really good, as compared based on my salary back in Singapore. But I didn't know that there were taxes. There were like, you have to pay insurance. You have to select. You have to pay a lot of things here, like for your car, for your other.
Joe, I'm so sorry to interrupt you again, but you seem to be breaking up. I know it's hard, but if you can maybe just try sit a little still, because I think that's interfering with your network. And you're saying such great things. I don't want anyone to miss it. Sorry, go ahead.
So budget-wise was really a struggle for me. So I was thinking I would be able to save more here, but because of the some of the things that you need to spend regularly, insurance, like I said, insurance, the car, the taxes and everything. So it ended up just so-so, similar or a little bit lower back in, from what I was earning in Singapore. So it was a, something for me to, I wish I knew about it, especially when I was being given the offer. So I should aim something higher, definitely. Do your research best. Try really to find out what's the minimum amount here. Information is really a key for you to get a better edge on per up on a particular deal. So that's it.
Yeah, I think that's a very important consideration. I think finances, that's the biggest thing also, because when I left the Philippines, you know, I was very young. I was like in my early 20s. So not a lot of financial, you're not very concerned about that, because when you're young, you just want to make money, you want to spend it. So I think it's important to know that, you know, at the end of the day, you are going to be responsible for your own expenses. So you have to budget money for your living expenses, your rent, your electricity, your insurance, your car payments if you have a car. So that those are considerations that, you know, I think you need to know when you move to a particular country. There are states where they have a very good transportation system, public transportation system, where others, you need a car. So when I was in Florida, I needed a car, so that was an important consideration. So the nurses that followed me after that, you know, the agency basically housed them close to the hospital so that they could ride their bike. Because at that time, it was just not practical to buy a car immediately, especially when you're starting. I think a lot of nurses, you know, they see, you know, the flashy cars and everything, and they're so inclined to do that. But I think it's important to look beyond, you know, the material things and look at, you know, what do I need right now? Do I need to pay loans that I borrowed from parents, and allocate, you know, a portion of your salary to pay back, and then see what is practical for you right now. Like, do I really need the car right now? Maybe I can ride the bus. That would help. Maybe I can take the train, or I can ride my bike and then save money. And then after 6 months, you know, you have enough down payment. So then your insurance is not high. You paid a good chunk of that down payment to that loan that you're going to take. And I think, you know, just financial management, I think that's an important piece where, you know, you're totally responsible for what you make and what you spend. And then you kind of create a budget on how you're going to live day to day based on what you earn and what you can potentially make. So then that opens up a lot of opportunities for you. Maybe I'll pick up a shift, and this will make my living expenses a little more, you know, tenable. Yeah, those things, I think. If I had known that early, then, you know, thankfully, you know, there were a couple nurses who mentored me, who were Filipino nurses as well. They gave me tips on how they did it. And so I did follow that advice. And that was so helpful, being financially wise and spending your money wisely. So important, because you'll see a lot of things there to buy. But at the end of the day, you're responsible for those payments that you will make if you go into debt, you know. So, yeah.
Really good advice from both of you. And I think for many nurses, it takes such a long time to come to America, and it's such a struggle, and it's so many sacrifices that with a lot of nurses, that if they don't know and aren't advised by those that have come before them, like what we're doing on the LaFora talk show, what often happens is they come here and they just have stars in their eyes and don't really realize how important it is to understand things financially and put themselves under a lot of stress. And then what I've seen with many nurses also, they feel very embarrassed about that. you know, because they didn't know what they didn't know. So they get themselves into a difficult situation because they, you know, went out and bought a car right away or bought two cars or, you know, just rushed into things and not really taking the time to understand things financially. And as Joe said, also is to do your research. Make sure that you understand where you're going to, what you're going to get paid, what the expenses are going to be. As Alvin said, the fact, you know, budget, you need to learn how things work in America and what you can expect to pay, because otherwise it really puts enormous stress on you when you arrive.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Nursing in America. Part 2 will be available next week, so make sure you come back to join us then. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us by hitting the follow button on your podcast player and leaving us a review. If you're thinking about making the step to living and working as a nurse in the USA, we can help you. Head over to kinetics.usa.com to find out more. That's kineticsusa.com.